We're honored by the presence of our commencement speaker this morning. In fact, we've been honored by this speaker's presence for the last 16 years. If you don't know him already as the guy who rides his mountain bike around campus in a suit, you'll know him as the 17th president of Whitworth University, who came to Whitworth from Manchester College in Indiana, where he served as president from 1986 to 1993. Most know him as our distinguished president. But he is also a communications scholar who has distinguished himself as a teacher, speaker, and community leader. Robinson received his bachelor's degree from the University of Northern Iowa, his master's degree from Wheaton College in Illinois, and his PhD from the University of Pittsburgh. He also studied at Princeton Theological Seminary and the Moody Bible Institute. Most of his scholarly work has focused on organizational, cross-cultural, and interpersonal communication. He has also done postgraduate research in religion and philosophy, areas in which he has lifelong interest. In 2002, Robinson published a book, Leading People from the Middle, The Universal Mission of Mind and Heart. He also has published a book this year entitled Incarnate Leadership. More than any of these accomplishments, I esteem Bill for his capacity to build a strong, academically excellent community at Whitworth. Robinson's connection with students is integral to his person and to his presidency. If you ask, he will tell you that his richest moments at Whitworth are the moments he shares with his students. His calling is to work with them and for them. His priority is always the student, but he recognizes that when a president empowers and encourages a faculty and staff, the net result is a happy, well-educated student body. So with that, I give you President Robinson.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks. Thanks to all of you for coming this morning. I know that you're not here to hear me or any of the other kinds of things that you're going to hear, that you're here to see your students graduate, and we're so proud of them. We love this particular graduation. We do the big one tomorrow at the arena for the undergraduates, and this is so much more intimate and pleasant and warm for us. So we're just delighted that you have joined us for this time. Well, yeah, I guess I have some explaining to do. I love Bible stories. They're interesting, they're funny, they're inspirational, they're just great. You don't have to be religious to get something out of a Bible story. That said, you might be wondering why I chose this Bible story for today's commencement address. Now, those of you who are teachers, you probably think you know exactly why I chose this passage. You're thinking, that caveman reminds me of one of my students. The little maniac is demon-possessed. Now I understand. Well, maybe he is, but that is not why I chose the story. Actually, my message to you graduates today is about your demons, and one demon in particular that could destroy the confidence that you should be feeling at this very moment. Now, most 21st century demons are not the poltergeist type. Usually, we refer to demons when we're talking about those uncontrollable impulses. We all seem to have them. Sometimes I say to myself, don't be stupid, Bill. Don't say that. Don't say that. I can't believe I said that. And almost any verb will qualify as a demon. Don't buy that. Don't eat that. Don't think that. Don't do that. And then the demon gets us and we do it. Yeah, that's what happens. It's the demon's fault. Our guy this morning had. Although I am pretty sure I did get sideswiped by a Bible demon in 1976. At the time, I was a student minister at the 200-year-old First Presbyterian Church of Pittsburgh. My office was tucked in the back of this magnificent sanctuary. It was a serene little cubicle, except for one Friday morning each month when faith healer Catherine Kuhlman held her healing services in our sanctuary. On those Fridays, a colony of afflicted people would settle into the pews not 15 steps from where I was trying to work. For the most part, it didn't bother me too much until this one Friday when I got a headache of supernatural proportions. The only thing I could figure out is that Ms. Kuhlman cast out a direct descendant of one of those legion demons who needed a pig to invade. So the demon must have mistaken my skull for a pig, or maybe he just thought he would have a little fun by tunneling through my brains on the way out of church because I thought my head was going to explode. Now, wouldn't it be nice if our demons just came up and smashed us and gave us a headache, did whatever they're going to do, and then left? Wouldn't it be nice if the anger demon stayed for one epic bout and left? Wouldn't it be nice if the depression demon told us just one time we're big losers and left? Wouldn't it be nice if our consumption demons stayed for one binge and left? Yeah, that would be nice, but that isn't how it works. Instead, the demons lie in waiting, looking for a home. They disguise themselves. They never knock. They just let themselves in when we leave the door unlocked. Sometimes we even invite the demons in, you know, when things get really hard. We have an excuse. We let the demons comfort or distract us from the moment. But in the long run, they will bind us. We think we'll just ask them to leave when things get better. But they don't like to leave. And so we try to bind them. But they break the chains. We never should have let them in. The stress of today's world has thrown open the door to a legion of demons. And the 2009 demon that seems most difficult to keep out is the demon of fear. You graduate today, but into what? There are so many unknowns out there. There are not very many safe places in this world economy. Even if we dodge the most direct bullets, we still have friends and people we love who are getting hurt. I prayed for you graduates this morning. I prayed that you would have jobs and keep jobs. It's hard not to worry about that. Our youngest child is also receiving her master's degree this weekend in St. Louis, and she doesn't have a job. It's hard not to worry about that. It's hard to lock out the fears. I've chosen today's topic because a master's degree will do you little good if you do not master your fears. You would not be here today if you didn't have the ability to succeed. This whole event is a celebration and acknowledgement of your success. You have every right to be confident, but you must expel your fear demons. Today's Bible story gives us a couple suggestions on how to do that. First, you need a higher power to battle demons. The 12-step program is famous for helping deliver people from the demon of addiction. Step one is admitting you're out of control. Step two is recognizing that you need a higher power. Now, this demon-possessed man in our story knew he was out of control. So if he could have exercised the demons by himself, he would have. He lived in a cave near a herd of pigs. How's that for a swine flu threat? He was imprisoned by his rage. Who would choose that life? This man needed a power that was higher than himself to deliver him, and he got it. As soon as Jesus arrived, the demons knew they were outmatched. Oh, Son of the Most God, please don't torture us. All of a sudden, the demons were groveling. At this point, don't you wonder why Jesus didn't just tell the demons to go back to hell? Why did he even talk to them? Isn't it kind of like negotiating with the terrorists when he granted their request for relocation? Was he just being kind to the demons? If so, what about the pigs? What would Peter say about that? Jesus just calmly responds to the demons' request. Okay, go. I think the point of this brief exchange between Jesus and the demons is not about Jesus and it's not about the pigs. The point is that the presence of great goodness leaves little room for demons. The Apostle Paul says it this way, overcome evil with good. You can't just expel your demons. You need a replacement strategy. You need the presence and power of goodness. You need to draw close to what is good and virtuous and positive. You need to surround yourself with life-giving influences. At Whitworth, we believe the greatest presence and power of goodness is exactly the one, the same one, that delivered this man. It is God revealed in Jesus Christ. If you share that belief, I hope you will do exactly what this man did. I hope you will throw yourself at the feet of Jesus. The Apostle John tells us that perfect love casts out fear. The power of Christ's love is strong enough to cast out your fears. If you follow Jesus, He is your best exorcist. Second, be warned that not everyone will be happy to see you conquer your fears. To me, the strangest part of this whole Bible story is the townspeople's reaction to the exorcism. Evidently, when this demon-possessed lunatic was out ranting and raving, the people were not scared. But when they found this guy sitting down, clothed, and in his right mind, they were scared. What's scary about that? When I babysat our children, my goal was to have them sitting down, clothed, and in their right minds. But it wasn't really the man who scared the townspeople. They were afraid of whatever was stronger than demons. Strength scares people. Our culture feeds on weakness. It exploits fear. If you don't believe me, turn on talk radio. When your fear demon is replaced by strength, confidence, and optimism, you can't be manipulated. You are no longer defined by your insecurities. Your strength might make people nervous. If you have townspeople in your life who start to get afraid, when you stop being afraid, get away from them. 3 days ago, some of our graduates lost their jobs. Some of the rest of you might not be far behind. So is it legitimate for you to be nervous and a little scared? Of course it is. Some fears are natural. In fact, fears are healthy when you use them. But fears become unhealthy when they use you. The question becomes one of, who is the master, you or your fears? You are master when your fears mobilize and motivate you. Your fears become master when they paralyze you. We could almost think of fear as a pharmaceutical in which the dosage is critical and an overdose becomes deadly. Martin Luther King Jr. had to treat fears with delicacy and control, both his fears and those of the people he led. He said, "Normal fear protects us. Abnormal fear paralyzes us. Normal fear motivates us to improve. Abnormal fear poisons and distorts our inner lives. Our problem is not to be rid of the fear, but rather to harness and master it." So, if fear is starting to get the upper hand in your life, I have a two-step program for you, which is 10 steps shorter than the 12-step program, but it's really only 8 steps shorter because I'm assuming you followed my 2 suggestions above. Get it? If not, this will be online on Tuesday on my website. Step 1. Do you remember the story about the time Jesus walked out on the water? It was night. The weather was terrible. The disciples were in a boat battling a fierce headwind. All of a sudden, they see this shadowy figure out on the water. They think it's a ghost, but it's Jesus, and he says, "Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid." So Peter says, "Okay, if it's really you, Lord, have me walk out to you on the water." So Jesus says, "Okay, come ahead." Now props to Peter for having the courage to step out of the boat. And he made it, did all right initially. But then the Bible says he became aware of the storm. And he was overcome by fear. And he began to sink. And he cried out for Jesus to save him. Now Peter was a commercial fisherman in the pre-life jacket days. You cannot tell me he did not know how to swim or dog paddle so that he could get back to the boat. But he was paralyzed by his fear. And that's what fear does. It can paralyze us. So here's step 1. When you start to feel fearful about what you can lose, focus on what you cannot lose. You cannot lose your education, so keep learning. You cannot lose your experience, so keep gaining it. You cannot lose the acts of service and compassion you have committed, so keep serving those less fortunate than you. And if you are a Christian, keep your focus on Jesus. You cannot lose his love and protection. Peter could lose this miraculous buoyancy, but he could not lose his Lord. It is only when Peter looked away from his Savior he began to sink. Step 2. Now, this is a great fear buster, and it's a step you can take today. After Jesus delivered the caveman from his demons, he gave him a maintenance program. As Jesus was boarding the boat, as Pam read, as he was getting to leave and get away from all these angry people, the man who had been demon-possessed begged him, "Let me come along with you." But Jesus said, "No. Go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you." That's step two. Gather with the people you love. Tell them how blessed you are. Show them your gratitude. Let your thankfulness and joy leave no room for the paralyzing demons of fear. Today is a day of rejoicing in all that you have accomplished. Don't be afraid. Great days lie before you. And may the peace of Christ chase away any fear that holds you back. God bless you.